reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 2nd chapter, prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. This is text 27, number 2 of the actual prayers of the demigods. I said they chant 16 shlokas. So this is shloka number 2, translation. The body, the total body, and the individual body are of the same composition, may figuratively be called the original tree. From this tree, which fully depends on the ground of material nature, comes two kinds of fruit, the enjoyment of happiness and the suffering of distress. The cause of the tree, forming its three roots, is association with the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. The fruits of bodily happiness have four tastes, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, which are experienced through five senses for acquiring knowledge in the midst of six circumstances: lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. The seven layers of bark covering the tree are skin, blood, muscle fat, bone marrow, and semen, and the eight branches of the tree are the five gross and three subtle elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, intelligence, and false ego. The tree of the body has nine hollows: the eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, the rectum, and the genitals, and 10 leaves. The 10 airs passing throughout the body. In this tree of the body, there are two birds. One is the individual soul, and the other is the super soul. I'll read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. This material world is composed of five principal elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether, all of which are emanations from Krishna. Although materialistic scientists may accept these five primary elements as the cause of the material manifestation, these elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna, whose marginal potency also produces the living entities working within this material world. The 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita clearly states that the entire cosmic manifestation is a combination of two of Krishna's energies, the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the inanimate material elements are his inferior energy. In the dormant stage, everything rests in Krishna. Material scientists cannot give such a thorough analysis of the material structure of the body. The analysis of the material scientists concerns itself only with inanimate matter. But this is inadequate, because the living entity is completely separate from the material bodily structure. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:5, the Lord says, Aporeyam itastanyam prakatim viddi me puram jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. Besides this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mine, which consists of all the living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Although the material elements emanate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, they are separated elements and are sustained by the living elements. As indicated by the word dvikagaha, the living elements within the body resemble two birds in a tree. Ka means sky, and ga means one who flies. Thus the word dvikaga refers to birds. In the tree of the body there are two birds, or two living elements, and they are always different. In the Bhagavad Gita 13.3, the Lord says, Shetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva shetreshu bharata, or skyan of bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. The Kshetrajna, the owner of the body, is also called the Khaga, the living entity. Within the body there are two such Kshetrajnas, the living soul and the super soul. The individual soul is the owner of his individual body, but the super soul is present within the bodies of all living entities. Such a thorough analysis and understanding of the bodily structure cannot be obtained anywhere but in the Vedic literature. When two birds enter a tree, one may foolishly think that the birds become one or merge with the tree, but actually they do not. Rather, each bird keeps its individual identity. Similarly, the individual soul and the super soul do not become one, nor do they merge with matter. The living entity lives close to matter, but this does not mean that he merges or mixes with it. Asangohi ayam purusha. Although the material scientists mistakenly see the organic and inorganic, or animate and inanimate, to be mixed. Vedic knowledge has been kept imprisoned or concealed, but every human being needs to understand it in truth. The modern civilization of ignorance is simply engaged in analyzing the body, and thus people come to the erroneous conclusion that the living force within the body is generated under certain material conditions. People have no information of the soul. But this verse gives the perfect explanation that there are two living forces, dvi kaga, the individual soul and the super soul. The super soul is present in every body. Ishwaraha sarva bhutanam hriddeshe junatishtati. Whereas the individual soul is situated only in his own body, dehi, and is transmigrating from one body to another. So, ekai and also dvipalas trimulas chaturasa panchvida shadatma satatvagashta vitapo navaksho dasha chari dvi kago yadi vrikshaha. So in this text, the devatas are describing the adi vrikshaha, the material situation for the living entity. Eka ayana. Now the word ayana means, actually Prabhupada doesn't give it here. The literal meaning of ayana is resting place. Like the name of the Lord is Narayana. Ayana. Nara, ayana. The resting place of all naras, or living beings. Nara, ayana. So there's one resting place. In other words, all the living entities in the material world, they have this one resting place, which is the Adi Vrikshaha, which is the basic tree. We know that word for tree, right? Kalpa Vriksha. The Vedas are called, we have Kalpa Vriksha, desire tree, Kalpa Vriksha, Kalpa Taru, another word for tree, Taru. So, Eka Ayana. As I said, this is a counting verse. We should know the numbers in Sanskrit, don't we? Eka means one. We all know that. Krishna's Eka, huh? Dvi. We know Dvi. two. What's the name of a Brahmana? Dvija, twice born. We know, should know, Dvi is two. Do we know three? Well, what word has a three in it? Triguna, yeah, Triguna. Tripurari, the killer enemy of the three cities of the demons, name of Shiva. Tri shows up all the time, Triguna. Chatu, four. Chaturatma, right? And the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam, and so on. Pancha Tattva, five. Is the Pancha Tattva. Shad Goswami Astaka. That has two numbers in it. Shad Goswami, six Goswamis. Shad. Shad Bhuja. There's also Chatur Bhuja. Krishna's four-arm form called Chatur Bhuja. Shad Bhuja means six. Six-arm form also. Sapta, not septa. Sapta. Now, what do we know that's sapta? Seven islands. That's Svetadweep, right? You're thinking, oh, it's sapta. I can't think of a sapta right now. Sapta, sapta. Seven. Saptarshi, the seven sages. Yeah. Yeah, sapta is seven. Just think of SEPTA, the local transportation authority. Change it to seven, SEPTA. Ashta, eight. Well, we have lots of Ashtas because we have lots of songs that have Ashta in them. Ashtakam, Guru Vashtakam, Ashtakam. Eight verses. Sat Goswami Ashtakam, eight verses in glorification of the six Goswamis, Ashta. Nava, nine, Navadweep, nine islands, we know now. Dasha, ten, Dashavatara, the ten avatars. Then, of course, back to Dwi Kago. Prabhupada says Kaga is another name for bird. Ka means ether or sky. One word for ether is sky. And Ga means go, actually. The word go comes from Ga. Gam, gachati, so on, goes. So that which goes in the sky, kaga, sky goer, that's a bird. There's no plane in Superman here, so it's just bird, kaga. The kaga. Anyway, so eka ayana, there's one resting place. As I said, this can be taken in a microcosmic sense and referring to the individual bodies of the living entity. But in one sense also, the whole universe is one organic body, one living body. And in that case, the soul is Brahma, and the super soul is of course, Krishna. But the soul of the universe, although sometimes the Lord is called soul of the universe, Vishvatma, there is actually an individual soul in the universe, and that's Brahma. And the universe is like his body. The universe is alive. Anybody wants to know? It has that. So anyway, eka ayana. Ayana means there's one resting place. That's why it says the body of an ordinary living being is fully dependent on the material elements. That, to be ayana, resting place, means that's what you depend upon. Narayana, the resting place of all beings, you depend upon Krishna ultimately. So ekayana, one resting place also of that is. And then dvipala, there's two fruits. So this ekayana, which we know is a tree, adi vrikshaha, when we come to the end. So this tree has two fruits. It produces two kinds of fruits. There's the red ones and the green ones or something. But one fruit tastes sweet and the other fruit tastes bitter. So that means the fruits of the action in the material world are of two kinds. One kind brings material happiness and the other kind brings material distress. So that's why there are two pala. Pala means fruit, dvipala. So the sweet and the bitter, or the happiness and distress. So as we see, the dvikago, this is from the Katha Upanishad, where the soul and the supersoul are referred to as two birds in a tree. That's why they're listed separately. You see all the elements of the tree, and then the birds, which hop around from the branches and are not really part of the tree, although they live in it, the soul and the supersoul. The one bird, the individual soul bird, eats those fruits that are sweet and bitter. He's going around pecking at them, hopping from branch to branch, pecking at the fruit. Whereas the other bird, the detached bird, the supersoul bird, it just witnesses, doesn't participate in the trying to taste the fruits. So, dvipalas. And then the tree has trimula. Mula means root. So it has three roots. So those three roots are described as what? Anybody remember? Yeah, the three modes of material nature, triguna. The three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So the whole body is resting in the three modes of material nature, like a tree rests on its root. So that's the body's created on the roots of this. And then chaturasaha. In this tree there are four kinds of juices. You know, there's fluids flowing in a tree. Trees have channels. We come to the channels later, but in those channels there are various kinds of juices. So the word rasa means any kind of fluid, really. Waters of rasa, or any kind of juices. So these, from the water, the tree drinks through its feet, its roots, and tastes these four chaturasaha, which are described as dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These are the five. They're called purushartha in Sanskrit. Purushartha. Artha means things that people hold valuable. Purushartha. Sometimes artha means described as goals of life. But they're almost ways of organizing your life around a certain value. Purushartha. So people organize their lives around either dharma, following religious principles, artha, wealth, or Prabhupada always says economic development, becoming more prosperous, dharma, artha, kama, satisfying the senses for material comforts, and then moksha, liberation. So these four values centers of orientation, fundamental orientations, are described in the Vedas. And Prabhupada describes them as sequential. That first of all, one follows the order of the Vedas, dharma, because he knows that by actually following Vedic principles, he will get artha. Economic development. Most people engage in their religious activities for the sake of economic development. And then from that economic development, they expect physical, aesthetic comforts, kama, sense gratifications of various kinds. And then finally, when they become disgusted with all that and have burnt it all out, they turn to moksha. So these are the four purusharthas, the four ways of values. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says there's a panchama purushartha, maha, great purushartha, panchama, the fifth purushartha, the prema, prema pumartha mahan. But actually Krishna prema is the fifth and the greatest of the pumartha. Puma, same as Purusha, Purushartha, Pumartha, Prema, Pumartha, Mahan. But generally, because Prema is so exalted, it's not mentioned. It's beyond moksha. So generally, Chaturasaha in the Vedas are these four rasas or tastes are there. The taste of Dharma, the taste of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, the five rasas, or juices flowing in this tree, four juices flowing in this tree. Now, pancha vida, so the body has five vidas, vida actually literally means channels. So in a tree, there are different sorts of channels for conveying fluids around and things like that. So these five channels are the five, compared to the five senses that acquire knowledge. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, the sense of seeing, the sense of hearing, the sense of smelling, the sense of taste, and the sense of touch. Panchavida, shadatma. Atma here means circumstances. Refer to the six circumstances. You could mean like kinds of bodies or bodily conditions or so on. Atma. Six circumstances. So these are considered to be the six circumstances of material life. That is to say, lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst that everyone has to deal with. Shapt twak. Twak means covering or bark. So actually, if you take the bark of this tree, you'll look, it has seven layers to it. Seven layers. And these are, the body is actually has these seven ingredients in it, a human body. Well, I think any animal body, skin, blood, muscle, fat, bone, marrow, and semen. These are the seven kinds of tissues, something like that, in the body are kinds of tissues. Ashtavitapaha. Vitapa means a branch. So there are eight branches. And these are the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, together with mind, intelligence, and false ego. These eight, Krishna says, comprise my separated material energies. Those are the branches of this tree, Ashta Vitapa. Navaksho. Aksha means a whole. You see the trees when they have knots in them, there's a hole is there. So the Ashta Vitapa. So these are the what's called in the Bhagavad Gita the gates of the body, places where the body has holes and to the outside. Then Dasachadi, the 10 kinds of life air. Chadi means the leaves, so that in our body, according to the understanding, Vedic understanding, the body is actually functions because of the life airs, which are I don't know, pana, upana, udara, I don't know them. Yogis learn them, and they learn how to control these airs. some are grosser and some are subtle. Different sorts of airs make the body function. So that's the tree. That's up to Astanavadasha. And then the two birds, the Dvitkago. Prabhupada spends time on that in the purport because he wants to make the point that here you have a better analysis of the situation in the material world than you'll ever get from material science. Because material science deals with earth, water, fire, air, and ether, finished. Even mind, intelligence, and false ego, the subtle elements, are beyond the scope of their investigation. So they can just deal with the five gross elements. Of all the ingredients of the creation, that's all they're competent to deal with. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And then they're trying various schemes to reduce everything down to just that. Solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy and space. They're the gross elements. Gross means that they are perceptible by the gross senses. Even the subtle material elements, mind is not perceivable by the senses. The senses, the expression of what we call the mind, is available to us in expressions. Like, for example, somebody is angry. When I say angry, that's about his mental state. But I don't see his mental state. What I see is the tension in his body, the redness of the face, and the sound that comes out of his mouth, which is loud and maybe full of curse words. And so from his behavior, I say, oh, he's angry. Because you cannot actually directly perceive mind, philosophers have actually tried to eliminate it as an element of one of the basic elements in their philosophy. This is called philosophical behaviorism, where they want to say, well, we don't have to assume that there's some what they call ghost in the machine. According to this idea, the material body is like a machine, but then there's this something that's a ghost in the machine. The body is clockwork, and then there's a mind which are little bits of not clockwork. Nobody knows what they are. So this is felt to be a crude idea, the idea of the ghost in the machine. So what we do is we don't really think that way anymore, and we just understand that when we talk about mind, we're just talking about behavior or a tendency to behave in a certain way, dispositions to behave. So even for myself, I say I'm angry. That's not a report on some occult state. That means I feel my body is tense, I feel my face is red, and I have a tendency to want to utter curse words loudly. And that's what I mean by action. It's just a report on my behavior or a tendency I have to behave in a certain way. And this way we can eliminate all discussion of this occult hidden thing that we can't perceive called mind, the little bits of not clockwork. Because they felt that this reference to mind, or what's even worse, consciousness, makes things untidy. Because this material scientist, Prabhupada doesn't use the word, but what is called is reductionism. In other words, that we can reduce all phenomena very neatly to just gross matter. And the idea is what we can perceive. And by perceive, really, material scientists mean measure. And by measure, they mean express in terms of numbers. what we can express in terms of numbers. That's what we can deal with our gross senses. We find some way to measure it and express it in terms of numbers. Then when you express it in terms of numbers, you can give mathematical relationships to everything and then take them through various sorts of mathematical processes and deduce consequences and so on. That way you can get a handle on it, what engineers like to call it. You can get a handle on material nature and start to do things with it. But if there's part of material nature that eludes your grasp, well, wait a minute, how could that be? So they want to say, they don't like to say, well, we are only going to deal with material nature insofar as we can express it in terms of numbers. And there's a whole lot more going on that we can't handle. They don't say that. What they like to say, is that if you can't express it in terms of numbers, it doesn't exist. So in other words, I can measure from my position becomes the standard of what there is. So that's why the idea of the soul, I mean, they don't understand any difference between a subtle body or subtle material elements in the soul. What to speak of. They don't understand the difference, what to speak of actually, so knowing what the soul is. But they know it's a problem. It's a problem. Consciousness, so on, intentions, feelings. There's one philosopher at the School of Philosophical Behaviorism, he has a famous quote. He says, well, there are no feelings, not really. He said, dispositions, perhaps, but not feelings. Disposition means a tendency to behave in a certain way. Can you imagine having that guy for, you know, a father or a husband? There are no feelings. No? That's what happens to these people. So the tendency to want to express things in terms of mathematics, as far as it goes, there's no objection. No, if you want to be able to deal with material nature that way and manipulate material nature, I mean, mathematics actually developed out of the Vedas. You know, I mean, we refer to Arabic numbers. The numbers we use, 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, there are Roman numerals, which are very clumsy and difficult to do mathematics with. So we have these other numbering systems, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 0, by which notation system we can express all numbers. And we call it, in America, we call it Arabic numerals, because the Westerners got them from the Arabs. Well, guess where the Arabs got them from? They got them from India. So really, they're Vedic numerals. And the real super innovation is the discovery of this notation zero. Because then you can really do all kinds of wonderful tricks to make your notation very simple and very elegant and so on. So this is actually comes out of the Vedas. So much mathematics is there. Because, like, you had to make a sacrifice in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas to do sacrifice. You have to make very precise measurements to build the sacrificial altars. They cannot be off even by a slightest degree, otherwise the sacrifice will be spoiled, and so on. So there's a whole science. That's where the science. So I mean, there's nothing wrong with science. As far as it goes, the problem is this arrogance that they want to say, you know, whatever we can, our ability to measure, that's the standard of truth. Or if I can't see it, or I can't deal with it, then it doesn't exist. On what basis is that proclamation made? The only basis is false ego. A huge false ego, giant false ego, the false ego that wants to say wants to say to itself this convenient little fiction that the universe is such a place that I can eventually hold the whole thing in my hand, just like a walnut. I've got it right here. and I can control it. So that's the origin of this the very destructive element of material science. Not the science itself, which in and of itself is relatively harmless, but the kind of scientific ideology that wants to make it the standard of knowledge. Where really what it is it's like a trade. It's material science, like the ability to make good shoes or something. You know, so it has a useful thing. You can make nice things with it and do things. So as a trade for making things, it's okay. As a tool for understanding reality, it's useless. It's useless. But anyway, they've taken it as a tool for understanding reality, and therefore they eliminate everything but earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy in space, and then anything else they can't handle. They want to say it doesn't exist. So Krishna gives this more complete analysis. First of all, there's that separated material energy of these eight things, the Ashta Vitapa, and then there's the Dvikaga, the two birds. Because Krishna says, he says to Arjuna in the seventh chapter, now I'm going to describe you everything there is to be known, and you know this, there's nothing more. So he describes the eight separated material elements, then apareyam, itastvanyam, and then besides this, there is another energy, the jiva, jiva bhuta, the living force. So this living, the living entities are not reducible to earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so on. They cannot be reduced. They're separate fundamental ultimate tattva category. You can't derive, in other words, you cannot derive life from matter. There are two separate energies that have flown, they flow together to create this world, mix it up. The living entities take up residence in these trees, and everything goes on. But the bird is not part of the tree. It may live in the tree may be green, the bird may be green, but the bird is not the tree. It flies in from the outside, so to speak. And when the tree is destroyed, because the nature of the tree is that in due course of time, it will be cut down. That's another reason. Prabhupada mentions this in Krishna book, why it's compared to a tree. A tree is, somebody will apply the axe and it will topple. And the material tree will go. But when that happens, the birds fly away. So they fly. So material scientists, they want to reduce the animate and inanimate to the same thing. Two separate fundamental principles. And then Krishna says, in both of these, the inferior and the superior, they come from me. And beyond me, there's nothing further to be known. The supersoul, that's it. So to understand material nature, you have to understand matter. You have to understand spirit, and you have to understand the origin, the source of both, who is Paramatma. And then you've got it. And that's knowledge, that's science. Science is not advanced unless it understands what is matter, what is spirit, and what is the origin of both. Then you have knowledge. That's what we're given here. Prabhupada says, Vedic knowledge has been kept imprisoned or concealed. But every human being needs to understand it in truth. So that's our business, to break it out and to correct the ignorance. The modern civilization of ignorance is simply engaged in analyzing the body, and thus people come to the erroneous conclusion that the living force within the body is generated under certain material conditions. Life comes from matter. That has to be corrected. People have no information of the soul. As a fact, Vedic knowledge has been kept imprisoned or concealed. So our idea is to let it loose and people can understand what's going on. So any questions? Yeah.
In the mainstream, say, in colleges today, in schools, are the majority, do the majority of teachers accept this standard of knowledge, common materialistic?
Yeah, sure. Because it goes by the name of science. It has this prestige, you know, of what they call science. Therefore, whatever science, that's what we know to be true. Now, you may have your belief, but that doesn't have a ring to it as science, right? Your faith, but science, that's what we know. That's how it goes. So you look at the textbooks. And that's why Prabhupada wants to use this word, science of self-realization. Veda means knowledge, which means science. Science simply means that which is knowledge. But it's not science, it's nescience. It should be called like that. You know. I'm taking, nescience 101. Advanced nescience. Graduate nescience.